Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
This is part 18 of my series on liberalism. Liberalism, the new improved broad road to destruction. Wow, what a week. I wish I had time to tell you all the things that have been happening. I would say mostly good, except the Bible, of course, in Romans 8 tells us that all things are working together for good. So I'll just say, wow, what a week. Everything's working together for good. But I don't have time to tell you the exciting things that have been taking place. But maybe as I go along in future episodes, podcasts. But anyway, we want to get going here. We've been looking at liberal terms and movements for some time that are used, and some of these terms like ecumenism and interfaith or interspirituality are really kind of used interchangeably in some people's minds. But I make that distinction of the ecumenical movement has to do with those trying to bring together people who claim to be Christians, whereas interfaith, interspirituality movement is those who are trying to bring together Christians with other religions, all of which, of course, all of whom are false, according to Jesus, since he says that he's the only way to God. And in my last, and really all of these various movements are all part of the drive towards a one-world religion. And I believe, of course, eventually it will take place, because Scripture tells us in Revelation 17, it speaks of Mystery Babylon, the great harlot. And we see this on every side, the things that are taking place coming together. I discussed an article last week by Sean Wilcock, Why is Francis Encouraging Muslim Immigration? And we finished that, but I just wanted to comment that one of the subtopics, I guess, in that article, you could say, was headlined, "So Far, the Jesuit Francis Plan is Right on Track." And I thought, isn't that wild, considering some of the things I'll be discussing today? Now, I'm not going to be referring back any more to that article than just the comments I just made. But I just found that interesting, because that's where the Lord has led me down this path today and for this week, and perhaps one more week, in wrapping up this little parenthesis that I've been doing concerning these very significant, very relevant liberal terms and movements in these last days, mostly that liberalism is using, because I think liberalism is really the greatest tool that Satan has to deceive people at every level. But anyway, I found a couple of recent articles. One of them I was going to read last week. I didn't have a chance, and so I will now. It's entitled, "The Pope and Top Imam Embrace in Historic Vatican Meeting." And I believe this was from Yahoo News. Not sure. I can't verify that, but I believe that's where I got this. And the article says, "Pope Francis embraced the Grand Imam of Cairo's Al-Azhar Mosque at the Vatican on Monday in a historic encounter," historic, of course, encounter. I want to emphasize that both sides hope will lead to greater understanding and dialogue between the two faiths. The first Vatican meeting, that is, the very first Vatican meeting between the leader of the world's Catholics and the highest authority in Sunni Islam. Sunni, of course, is the major sect of Islam, as opposed to the Shiite sect, which is quite smaller, but very significant as well. This meeting marks the culmination of a significant improvement in relations between the two faiths since Francis took office in 2013. The two sides had agreed to convene a peace conference. Remember, we talked a lot about peace in the last few episodes. A statement quoted Tayyab as telling Francis, "We need to take a joint stance, hand in hand, to bring happiness to humanity. Divine religions were revealed to make people happy, not to cause them hardship." Make them happy. Okay. Yes, the happy jihad. Anyway, I digress. Ties were badly soured when the now retired Benedict, Pope Benedict, made a September 2006 speech in which he was perceived to have linked Islam to violence. Can you imagine such a thing? Sparking deadly protests in several countries. So, well, I'm glad they didn't, you know, react violently or anything. But anyway, sparking deadly protests in several countries and reprisal attacks on Christians. Like I say, thank God Islam is not a violent religion. But Vatican spokesman Federico Lombardi said in a statement that the Pope and the Imam had mainly addressed the common challenges faced by the authorities and faithful of the major religions of the world. These included working together for world peace, rejecting violence and terrorism, and the situation and protection of Christians against a backdrop of conflict and terrorism in the Middle East. And Jesus said there would be wars and rumors of wars before he returned, and that he, of course, is the Prince of Peace, and there will be no lasting peace until he returns. But nevertheless, these folks who are motivated by a different spirit than the Holy Spirit of God are working together for world peace. The Pope presented the Imam with a copy of his recent encyclical, Laudato Si, a letter to the faithful in which he urges the world to wake up to the threat posed by climate change and economic inequality. So the Pope, you know, doing his best to work out the, you know, deal with these problems of climate change. Used to be called something else. Oh, well. You probably remember. I've already forgotten what they used to call that. And economic inequality. A little bit like our president, this Pope. The numerous conciliatory gestures Francis has made to the Muslim world since being elected in early 2013, this man, Tayyip, decided to accept the invitation to Rome because of that. These numerous conciliatory gestures. Now, he wanted to promote true Islam and to correct misunderstandings created by extremist terrorist groups. After the tensions of the Benedict years, Francis moved quickly to set a new tone, sending a personal message to the Muslim world to mark the end of the first month of Ramadan of his pontificate. The Argentinian pontiff, that is, the Pope, is from, of course, Argentina. He followed up by pushing various interfaith, or as I like to call them, interspiritual, initiatives, and he was accompanied by both Rabbi Abraham Skorka and Islamic studies professor Omar Abaud when he visited Jordan and Israel in 2014. But perhaps the gesture that clinched the deal was the most dramatic piece of political theater of his papacy, his April visit to the migrant crisis island of Lesbos, which concluded with him bringing three Syrian Muslim families back to the Vatican. Of course, we discussed that a little bit in that article I mentioned by Sean Wilcock. Why is Francis encouraging Muslim immigration? Another noteworthy article, I think, that I wanted to refer to from the Washington Times. For the first time in Vatican history, where have we heard that before? This last thing I was telling you about was a historic encounter. Well, this is for the first time in Vatican history. The Pope allowed for the reading of Islamic prayers and Quran readings from the Catholic facility. The readings and prayer came as Pope Francis met with Israeli President Shimon Peres and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas in Vatican City, a gathering designed to pray for Middle Eastern peace. A Holy See spokesman said the prayers were supposed to be a pause in politics. Breitbart news agency reported. The Pope said, too, that he hoped the interfaith prayers would foster peace specifically between Israelis and Palestinians, the news outlet said. All right. Now, I have one more article. And if I could find it, I would read it to you. Oh, here it is. All right. Forgive me. Thank goodness for a sense of humor. And thank the Lord for his help in accomplishing this task. I found the article. By the way, did I mention what a week I've had? And I didn't mention the fact that I had a tooth extraction 2 days ago, and I bit my tongue earlier today while dealing with the tooth extraction. Anyway, it's a long story. And then I had a coughing fit, but this was about an hour ago, and I'm doing much better now. So we'll just keep pressing on. But I wanted you to know that I'm very thankful for the opportunity of doing this. But like any human being, I have my challenges from time to time. Now, moving on, the next article, and the last two articles I read really, as I read, were really what we would call interfaith or interspirituality related articles. This one I would call an ecumenical article because this is dealing, again, with professing Christians. And I might say, shockingly, some very visible, highly visible Christian leaders, a few who one wonders what the heck were they thinking, or at least that's what I'm thinking, wondering what they were thinking. But anyway, you may have seen this article from the Christian Post. Pope Francis, now this man gets around, doesn't he? I hope he's not doing it in a big jet that's leaving a big carbon footprint because we got to deal with this climate change stuff. But anyway, Pope Francis joins Lecrae, and you'll have to forgive me if I don't even know who Lecrae is. I guess that's, I'm really out of touch. I do know who Hillsong is, at the historic 1 Million Strong Together 2016 D.C. event. It says evangelical leaders are calling on 1 million Christians to gather together in the nation's capital next month for prayer and worship at a historic event called Together 2016. Adding his name to the lineup of prominent guest speakers and musicians is Pope Francis, who will deliver a video message addressing the crowd. Now, this gentleman here, Nick Hall, the founder of Pulse, a prayer and evangelism movement, had this to say: "We are humbled and honored by his involvement, Pope Francis, that is, and are eager to share his message with the crowd that gathers it together 2016, Hall said in a statement to the Christian Post. Reacting to the announcement that the Pope has added his name to the list of speakers that His Holiness would choose to speak into this historic day is a testament to the urgency and the need for followers of Jesus to unite in prayer for our nation and our world. Hall, a college pastor, came up with the radical idea of uniting pastors and Christian leaders from all denominational backgrounds to join 1 million people at the free event in hopes of inspiring true revival in America. And I would just make one revision to that sentence, and I would say in hopes of inspiring false revival in America, because I believe that's exactly what it'll be, this ecumenical thing. And I have to say, before I mention some of these other speakers, that, you know, maybe at the time that they were booked, they didn't know that the Pope was coming. I know one thing: if I was a speaker and I was booked and I knew the Pope was coming, I would graciously have to bow out and I would tell them why. But I gotta believe I probably wouldn't have been in this mix to begin with, because of the ecumenical nature and some of the other individuals that are involved. Now, I read on. Over 40 well-known speakers, recording artists, authors, and leaders from various backgrounds will be featured at Together 2016, Unified in Prayer and Worship. Confirmed guest speakers and artists include Hillsong United. Of course, Hillsong, I believe Hillsong, you know, forgive me for my lapse. I believe Hillsong, this is the group in Australia that's so popular. Their music is very popular, and they are into word faith and other heretical teachings. Francis Chan, the man with no discernment, who many people like, but who has spoken at the IHOP, notorious IHOP conferences, and among other things. And I'm just reading you some of the names. There's other names you would recognize as well. Kirk Franklin. Ravi Zacharias, people think the world's greatest apologist, but there again, got to pray for Ravi Zacharias. Michael W. Smith, that doesn't shock or amaze me because of his interest in contemplative prayer, etc., promoting such. Mark Batterson, this is the guy that wrote the book about praying circles or something. You know, I had planned on having his book hand right near me here where I could read you the title. I apologize. Next podcast, hopefully I can give you the proper title of his book, but it's a book that's way off. Some people have compared it almost to witchcraft, as far as a way to have answered prayer through, you know, casting circles or something. I don't remember. I wish I had the book in front of me, but I will get it next week. Josh McDowell, I could pray for Josh. Luis Palau, of course, he's also from Latin America, probably Argentinian, I believe. but also very ecumenical, unfortunately. Ronnie Floyd, head of the Southern Baptist, fortunately won't be the head much longer. I understand his time's just about up over there, which is great. He was a featured speaker also at IHOP, has promoted Joyce Meyer, thank you. He's promoted so many bad things. Ann Vascomp, she's another one of the leading people there. She's totally into the contemplative spirituality, which, of course, is another way that liberalism is spreading deceptions. And I will get into more about that down the road, as I've said before. I'll just be able to scratch the surface. As I see, we're already about halfway through my program. But that's the ecumenical. I'm adding a few of the more recent articles since I finished up, speaking and showing the connections to the Pope with the ecumenical Christian bodies, so-called Christian bodies, and then the world religions. And these were just articles that kind of came across my path while I was finishing up last week's podcast, and I wanted to get those in. Now, I'd like to examine next the connection with Thomas Merton, a famous Catholic monk who has passed away years ago, the Dalai Lama, Tibetan Buddhist guy. That's probably not exactly his title. But and then Pope Francis, that there's a connection there. I have some friends that are with Christ-Star Missions, and they are seeking to reach out to Tibetan Buddhists. And I only mention that because you could remember them in prayer. Lumen and Karen Burton is their name. And I mention that because they actually, on I think the 18th of June, will be in California, where the Dalai Lama is going to be speaking. They got tickets to go in and hear this false teacher, this major antichrist. And who knows, maybe they can give him a Christian tract while they're there. I don't know. But I do know that Thomas Merton, the Catholic Trappist monk, and the Dalai Lama, of course, had a real connection. And Pope John Paul II had a real connection with the Dalai Lama. This Pope Francis, though, he really gets around, as I've already mentioned some of his stops along the way. I mentioned William Swing of the United Religions Initiative the last couple of weeks. And in one of my recent podcasts, I read an old LA Times article about Pope John Paul II and the Assisi Italy gathering. I forgot what that was called. It was like a prayer for world peace kind of thing. And of course, the Dalai Lama was one of the predominant figures there. He was close friends with Pope John Paul II. And so the Dalai Lama has actually been around. He's still kicking. As I say, my friends are going to see him if he's still alive by June the 18th. He's been around. Of course, that won't matter. Of course, to his thinking, he'll just be reincarnated again. Anyway, I'm being a little sarcastic. But this Tibetan Buddhist leader has been around through at least the last three popes. At least the last three popes. Like I say, but if you ask him, he would tell you he's been around a lot longer via reincarnation, because that's what he believes, and that's part of their belief system, unfortunately. Now, I found a CD collaboration. It's a CD with all kinds of information, and it's actually called Compassion, and it's really kind of a linking. Actually, it's dedicated, it says on here, to fulfilling the legacy of His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, and Thomas Merton by bringing East and West together in compassion. So there you have it, folks, and there's your inner faith. There's your inner spirituality in action from a few years back. This was dedicated in the year 2000, so almost 16 years ago. But Merton has been dead much longer than that. He died actually in the 60s. But anyway, I wanted to read that dedication before I read on. And like I say, there is a connection, with Merton, the Dalai Lama, Pope John Paul II, and now the Pope Francis. And I would like to read a few of the things from that CD compilation. CD plus all these notes and what have you. And let's just see where we can go with this. Thomas Merton and His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. There's a picture of them in 1968. It says, East meets West. High in the Himalayas of northern India, on the border near Nepal and Tibet, an historic meeting took place in 1968 between the two most influential monks of the 20th century. One's a Catholic monk and one is a Tibetan monk, Tibetan Buddhist monk. A meeting between His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama, and Thomas Merton. The Dalai Lama, 28 years old, had established a Tibetan government in exile in Dharamsala, India, 9 years earlier. Merton, 53 years old, a Trappist monk, writer, and activist for peace and civil rights, had achieved worldwide recognition for his writings on the life of the spirit. During their time together, each recognized in the other a shared commitment to bringing the worlds of East and West together through humankind's greatest strengths, wisdom and compassion. The Dalai Lama felt that Merton was his spiritual brother and referred to him as a Geshe, a title of high learning in Tibetan culture. Of his three meetings with the Dalai Lama in Dharamsala, Merton wrote in his last journal that a great affection was born, concluding, "There is a real spiritual bond between us." Shortly after meeting with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Merton traveled to Bangkok, Thailand to make a presentation at the Bangkok Conference devoted to East-West dialogue. Following his speech, Merton returned to his hotel room, showered, then crossed the room to turn on an electric fan. There was an electrical short in the cord, and upon touching the fan, he was instantly electrocuted. It was on December 10th, 1968, 27 years to the day from when he first entered the Abbey of Gethsemane, if I'm pronouncing that correct, in 1941. The deepest level, by the way, Thomas Merton, I've been to more or less his shrine, I guess you could say, down in Kentucky. That's where his monastery that he was related to, and there was a college there. I think it was Bellarmine or something like that. But anyway, they had a whole big shrine to this guy, Thomas Merton. Anyway, it goes on to say, the deepest level of communication, and this is a quote from Thomas Merton, deepest level of communication is not communication, but communion. It is wordless. It is beyond words. It is beyond speech. And it is beyond concept. Not that we have to discover a new unity. We discover an older unity. We are already one. But we imagine that we are not. And what we have to recover is our original unity. What we have to do to be is what we are. Well, let me just say, I'm almost beyond speech when I hear things like that. Because, of course, we know that God has transmitted to us His Word, which we're to read, which is how we are communicated to by God, by reading His Word and by His Holy Spirit bringing this truth to us. And for people to commune spiritually without words, well, let's just say that's a little weird, but that's how you do it. And the world of the monasteries, be it some of the Catholic monasteries or whether they be Tibetan, Buddhist, Hindu, what have you, that's inner faith, that's inner spirituality, just to ring it home for y'all. But it is beyond words, it is beyond speech, it is beyond concept. And you don't have to discover it. It's already there. We're already one. So you get the idea that something's rotten in Kentucky here. no offense to Kentucky. I actually like a lot of the folks in Kentucky. I have a lot of friends in Kentucky. But something was rotten in Merton's spirituality, let's say. Very popular man. But anyway, let's move on. Some more notes. The commitment of His Holiness. Okay, well, here's a quote from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. The purpose of religion is not to build beautiful churches or temples. It is to cultivate positive human qualities such as tolerance, generosity, and love. Fundamental to every world religion is the belief that we must reduce our selfishness and serve others. Yeah, it sounds great. Yada, yada, yada. But again, what do we need world religions for when we have Jesus Christ telling us He's the only way to God? Anyway, the commitment of His Holiness. Merton's death shocked the world and moved His Holiness the Dalai Lama to commit the remainder of his life to fulfilling Merton's wish of bringing the wisdom of East and West together in compassion. 25 years passed. In 1993, at the Parliament of World Religions, His Holiness the Dalai Lama and members of the Monastic Interreligious Dialogue felt that the conditions in the world were right for leaders of the Eastern and Western monastic traditions to meet. Monastic traditions, of course, meaning monastery-related traditions. Because of his deep bond with the late Thomas Merton, His Holiness the Dalai Lama suggested Merton's former home, the Abbey of Gethsemane in Trappist, Kentucky, for the site of this historic gathering. It would be called the Gethsemane Encounter. This encounter, the worlds of East and West converged in July of 1996 at this abbey, the oldest Trappist monastery in the New World, for 6 days of shared dialogue, ritual, and silence. From the very opening of the encounter, something extraordinary was present, a sense of timelessness, of recognition, of common bond. Each moment seemed frames magnified, heightened. Much was communicated with the eyes, with gestures, with smiles. Words fell into the background. A deep silence emerged that enfolded everyone. At one point, it seemed as though the turning of the worlds and all the heavens had stopped, and that the participants were suspended in dream time. Well, I don't doubt that's possible. Anyway, but from that place, music spoke. The sound of a solitary cello became the common voice. And so music, there's a lot of music, obviously. That's the CD that they have music on it. And here's a quote from one of the participants, Ewart Cousins. Although we are moving toward the global community, we face what seems to be insurmountable obstacles, ecological disaster, economic injustice on a worldwide scale, widespread warfare. Against these forces, we must individually and globally devote ourselves to building the earth. We must recapture the unity of tribal consciousness and see humanity as a single tribe. And we must see this single tribe related organically to the total cosmos. This means that the consciousness of the 21st century will be global from two perspectives. First, from a horizontal perspective, cultures and religions must meet each other on the surface of the globe, entering into creative encounters that will produce complexified collective consciousness. Second, from a vertical perspective, they must plunge their roots deep into the earth in order to provide a secure base for future development. They must develop a new spirituality. Catch that. A new spirituality of the earth and of the material aspects of human existence. This new spirituality must be organically ecological, supported by structures of justice and peace. The voices of the oppressed must be heard and heeded. The poor, women, racial groups, and all other minorities. These groups, along with the earth itself, can be looked upon as the prophets of the 21st century. This emerging global consciousness is not only a creative possibility, it is an absolute necessity if we are to survive. That's Ewart Cousins, the Gethsemane Encounter. I'm going to try to close this out, at least, you know, I'm not going to make it. So, but anyway, Thomas Merton said, it's obvious that we have to plan the future. The essential in life is not embedded in buildings. It's not embedded in clothing. It's not embedded necessarily even in a rule. But it is somewhere along the lines of something deeper than a role. It is somewhere concerned with this business of total inner transformation, and all other things serve that end. If you once penetrate by detachment and purity of heart to the inner secret of the ground of one's ordinary experience, you attain a liberty which nobody can touch, which nobody can affect. This kind of freedom and transcendence are somehow attainable. The whole idea of compassion is based on a keen awareness of the interdependence of all these living beings, which are all part of one another and all involved in one another. The whole purpose of life is to live by love. And I am going to close out for today, and we will finish up the notes from this CD compilation and then continue on in the connection with Thomas Merton the Dalai Lama and Pope Francis. So God bless you all. Keep looking up. Jesus is coming soon.